Hi, today is April 8th, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 201, and it is day 905 since the Mac Mini was last refreshed. I'm Todd Ogasso, with my good friend John Westfall. Are you still waiting for Mac Mini, John?
I am. I check that count every day, live and die by it. And we've got this week just some new rumors that, according to a couple of sources, the Mac Mini is eventually going to get refreshed within our lifetimes and maybe even sooner than our death.
Well, you know, you're a lot younger than me, John, so it might be within your lifetime, but I may not make it.
I have faith, Todd, that it will be within your lifetime as well. I really hope it is within the lifetime of my Mac Mini that's sitting over here.
Yeah, and more importantly, right?
Is horribly underpowered right now. My Mac Mini is circa 2010, early 2010. In fact, I don't know if it's the refresh that came out in 2009 or 2010, but it is pretty slow. And I would open up the about page to tell you how slow it is, but it would probably take most of our podcast for me to VNC into it just to look at that.
Yeah, maybe it's time to get a Raspberry Pi 3 and
you know, some days you start to wonder about that.
Because I think a Raspberry Pi 3 is more powerful than your 2010 Mac Mini.
Well, I'm trying to load it up now so we can keep talking. Okay. And once I know how old my Mac Mini is, I will tell us.
All right, so in about 95 days... it will be a full 1,000 days since the Mac Mini was last refreshed. The last time it was refreshed was, and John just pointed me to this Mac Rumors page, was in, let's see, October 2014. A very different world. It was a very different world the last time the Mac Mini was last updated.
Yeah, different administrations. There was just so much different going on in the world. The last time there was a Mac Mini refresh. And, you know, for being, I think, what Apple thought of as the entry-level Mac, the thing that was supposed to get you to see how great the Mac ecosystem was, I think this really points out that what Apple is selling is not how great the Mac ecosystem is, but how great the hardware is. And the idea is we don't really care how much... if you like the operating system, we want you to like the hardware. So the operating system running on some hardware that's not particularly all that great, we're not going to bother to refresh it. So my Mac Mini is a late 2009. It is I do have OS 10 El Capitan on it, but it is 2.53 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo with 4 gigs of RAM, 1067 megahertz DDR3, and it's slow.
Well, compared really to the one slow. I had, the first generation Mac Mini, which had a G4 in it, wasn't even Intel. It died, unfortunately, right after the warranty expired, I think. But I got some good usage out of it, and it was a starter kit for me. I ended up buying an iMac after that, and MacBook and things. So, it did lead me to to buy more Macs.
Mine tried to die. And then I replaced a hard drive in it last year and replaced a hard drive temperature sensor in it because I broke that when I was trying to replace the hard drive. That. So, yeah, mine tried to die, but it wasn't successful. I resurrected it. So, but I'm ready for a new one, and pretty much everything on mine is now held on external hard drives. So migration should be a snap.
Well, based on your success, I upgraded my let's see, I think it's a 2008 iMac last year, and it's still running. So I was planning to replace it with a Mac Mini, but now that the iMac is still running, it's going to be, 9 years old this year, I think? It is 9 years old this year. So I can wait. I can wait. And now, of course, my iMac's going to die now that I've said that. But
most likely, yes. Yeah.
But anyway, Apple... you have lost your mojo, and we are waiting for a new iMacs and new Mac Minis. And apparently, you guys designed the Mac Pro wrong, so you can't upgrade it, which is kind of sad. That's what happens when you have a little cylinder as your design platform for your most powerful Mac. Not the smartest thing. Okay, so next up, couple of two small things I bought recently. First, you know, I've been talking to John about my Daily Doodle project. So I started with my Apple Pencil, which is what I use pretty much every day for my Daily Doodle. And which you can see on ogasawalrus.com, by the way. Not all of them, but like three. But I'm still doing them every day. So every day since January 1st. I bought a pencil by 53. It was too fat to kind of see under the tip, so it's hard for me to draw. I know a lot of people use it successfully. It's just not for me. So the other week I bought a Sensu Artist brush and stylus, which is actually looks like an actual paintbrush. It is a passive device. It's got no Bluetooth or any other kind of RF. But it seems to work okay, you know, given that it's basically just a capacitive brush. I'm trying to find a good setting so that it draws like a brush versus a stylus that looks like a brush. But I'm pretty happy with it, so I'm looking forward to playing with it a bit more on the Mac Mini. iPad Mini 4, which doesn't support the Apple Pencil. And that's the main reason I bought it, so I could draw on something other than the iPad Pro Junior.
So years ago, I bought a stylus that had a paintbrush tip to it, and I wasn't too thrilled with it, but I still have it over here occasionally pull it out, so I'll be interested to see your continued explorations of it to see how useful it is in your doodles.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. The fact that I can see what I'm drawing helps a lot, even though, you know, it doesn't have pressure sensitivity and other things that the Pencil by 53 does, or, you know, the Apple Pencil does. And basically what I really want is an iPad Mini Pro that supports the Apple Pencil. But since that doesn't seem to be in the works, since Apple has lost his mojo, we'll just wait and see. The next small thing I bought is, you know, as you know, I've been raving on and on about my Samsung Chromebook Plus, which is what still my daily driver at home. So I thought, well, you know, instead of having to use its power supply, I better have a backup power supply. So I bought an Anker PowerPort 5 USB-C. Now, despite its name, it only has one USB-C port, charging port. The other four ports are USB-A, standard, you know, size ports. And I, you know, being too lazy to actually look at the power supply on my Chromebook, I didn't see how many amps it needs. And quite honestly, even looking at it, it's doggone confusing to see how many amps it needs. I think it needs 3 amps. But unfortunately, the Anker PowerPort 5 has 2.4 amps, which is plenty. You know, that's enough for an iPad, for example. So I kind of hope it would be enough for a Chromebook Plus, which is kind of like a big iPad Pro. When I plug it in, this Samsung Chromebook Plus is not, it's a low power charge. So while the device is on, the screen is on, it won't charge. Presumably it'll trickle charge if I turn it off, but I haven't tried that yet. So I am still going to be looking for an alternative to charging my Samsung Chromebook Plus, which I may travel with every now and then, I think. But I don't travel much, but I really, really, really enjoy using it. So there's that. It wasn't that expensive, by the way. It was like, I don't know, $25 or something. So I don't feel that bad, and it's still a good Anker, you know, USB-A charger, so I can use it for other things.
Very cool.
And the last kind of thing out of my list before we get John's list, which is quite frankly more interesting than mine, is that I noticed that Showtime, if you are a subscriber to Showtime, now makes its entire library available for mobile viewing, you know, on iPads and things. I have not tried it, although, you know, oddly enough, it just occurred to me, I actually have a Showtime subscription on my TV, so I don't know if that's good enough to do this. But I will go take a look and see if you need to actually buy the Showtime Go or whatever it's called thing, in which case it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I didn't, you know, like I said, I could barely remember I had it. It's bundled with a deal I have, but I've never actually changed the channel selector to view Showtime, so I kind of forgot about it.
And I haven't ever had a Showtime subscription, so I don't even know what I'm missing.
Yeah, I don't, you know, like, yeah, I don't know what series or whatever is on Showtime. Like, you know, years and years ago, The Sopranos used to be on HBO. That was kind of a must. I guess Game of Thrones is on HBO. So, you know, the HBO has shows that people really know about. And Netflix, too. Netflix has a bunch of shows now that people are pretty excited
about. You know, I'm going to say something a little bit risque in a moment here. This is a family podcast, but... I'm going to make a point that, you know, it used to be that there were two primary reasons to watch HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, all of those premium channels. One was that they had less commercials so they could have more in-depth drama programming.
No commercials, yeah.
Yeah, no commercials or very few. Yeah. No, you know, in-depth drama, a little edgier than what you'd find on broadcast TV or mainstream cable, basic cable. And quite frankly, for most people, there were also shows that were broadcast late at night on those networks that people enjoyed watching because, you know, for other more basic needs, they enjoyed those shows. Today, we have very good drama that's available on Netflix, Hulu, a number of different platforms.
Award-winning.
Yeah, very good stuff that is edgy and it's unique. And so I think that sort of fills that market. And literally, if whatever your pleasure is to watch of people doing to each other, you can find it on the internet much easier than waiting for something to show up late at night on Showtime or Cinemax or something like that. So I really sort of wonder, HBO, I think, has made a good name for themselves in drama, and I think they'll be able to sustain that. But, you know, Showtime, I don't really know.
Cinemax, kind of the third-tier networks.
I don't know if we need them as much anymore. I think their content kind of is now on Amazon and Netflix, and it may become the home of it in the future would be Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, that sort of deal.
Well, I tell you, I don't know other people. The only series I can think of that was associated with Showtime that's really well known is Dexter. I can't think of anything else that's associated with Showtime. Could be wrong.
And I would guarantee you that if you asked people which network Dexter was on, you gave them a choice of, you know, Showtime, HBO, and, you know, HGTV or whatever, they would probably think it was HBO and not Showtime. So.
Or whatever Walking Dead is on. What is that? AMC?
AMC. So. AMC. Who would have thought AMC was going to start being like a drama powerhouse after showing that have been around for 30, 40, 80 years.
Right, AMC did what? The Shield? They did, gosh, what's my favorite show? The one, that brain cell died. This is weird. I can remember the sequel. Better Call Saul.
So Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, best TV series ever.
it's quite amazing how American movie classics, AMC. Reinvented themselves over the last 20 years.
Okay, so that's that. And so John's got this list. Now, the first one, I kind of have an answer for that, but go ahead, John.
Well, my wife asked me about this, you know, and for reasons that we'll talk about later, my wife has thought about getting a new iPhone. She's on an iPhone 6. There's a really long, drawn-out story about why I don't upgrade her automatically on iPhones anymore. She has to ask me when she wants to upgrade. So she was talking about, you know, who is this red iPhone really appealing to? Mm. What is it, you know, is it really something that I should care about? And I thought, you know, it is unique that we're neutral on the iPhone update cycle. We're probably not going to see them come out until the fall as usual. And Apple did take an interesting step in releasing a red iPhone.
Right.
They didn't release a dumbed-down version of an iPhone like they've done in the spring of the past with the iPhone 5C I guess the 5C came out when the 5 came out, or the 5S came out. But the iPhone SE was one that kind of came out in spring. So, red iPhone, I do wonder if it's – I think it's just the people who need to upgrade, and wow, I have a red option. I don't see people – ditching a regular iPhone 7 for a red iPhone 7.
Well, you know, John, I think it's as I said, I have an opinion, and here's my opinion. I think people like you and I don't really care about a specific color as much as what we don't want. So basically, I want a dark iPhone where the contrast is high enough, even with the case off, so that, you know, I'm not distracted by like a white case or something. But if you remember, when the black MacBook came out years ago, you had to pay extra.
Yeah,
you had to pay $100 extra for I think it was a matte black MacBook, and people got all excited when the white iPhones came out.
Yeah,
and the gold rose or rose gold or whatever it's called. So for some people, the color of their phone is very important.
You know, it's funny you talk about. rose gold, and I heard a new slang term because apparently there's a subsect of men out there.
Yeah.
So we all know that there are these weird subsects of people, and one of them that there's a subsect of men who like My Little Pony, and they're called bronies. Apparently, there is a subset of men that really like the rose gold color, and they refer to it as bros gold.
Okay.
I came across that somewhere this week and thought that was worth sharing.
I like it. You know, and quite frankly, you know, if I were just going to buy a new phone, if I needed a new phone and a red one available, I like red. I might consider it. I'd also consider blue. Not green or yellow, though, but even though those are nice colors. Mm. Or purple, for that matter. None of those would make me happy. But blue or red? Yeah, that'd be interesting, I think.
You're a colorist.
I am.
Yeah, very colorist.
I'm color biased.
I thought we had moved beyond that in our culture.
Yeah.
Level.
Like the blues, like the reds.
Color equality. So that was a little bit on the red iPhone. So speaking of iPhones and Apple, next two items kind of go together on that. In fact, I'm going to jump over one and then come back because we've talked a little bit about it. The iPhone 8, which most people are expecting to see this fall,
right?
Even though we should get a TikTok, we should be on Talk, we should be on the iPhone 7S and 7S Plus. But there's this argument that Apple's going to jump straight to the iPhone 8.
Hmm.
But if they do that, the changes in the iPhone 8 are going to be so massive that some analysts now are saying you might still pre-order it in September, but instead of Apple taking maybe 3 weeks and then you get your pre-order, if you got in your order at the beginning of the cycle of pre-ordering, you might be waiting months before you actually see the phone.
Wait, so say that again. So you're saying that even if they announce it in, say, September and allow you to pre-order, you may not see it till, like, much later?
Till October, end of October, November, December. Yeah, that's...
Okay, that's not too unusual, but November, December, that would be weird.
Yeah, and that's kind of what most people... That's why I don't put too much stock in this rumor just yet.
Yeah.
The idea would be that because of the required hardware, that it would be hard to source it and get it out. But the idea would be that you wouldn't see any launch until October, November, but you might be able to pre-order in September. So it's an interesting idea. Of course, this is presupposing that the rumors that we might go to a 5.8-inch model with an OLED display are true. That would be bigger than the current 5.5-inch iPhone Plus.
Right.
So we'll have to see.
Okay. So two things. One I alluded to earlier, and that is, it's not, or it hasn't been unusual for Apple to announce, say, a new iPhone in September, but not make it available for a couple of weeks, let's say mid-October. That happened last time, I think, or last
couple of releases. It's happened a few times, yep.
But what would be kind of, sort of unusual would be to jump the talk, go directly from 7 to an 8, because in general, moving a major number, the ticks, means a form factor change.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll bring back the headphone jack.
What we might see, and this wouldn't be too crazy, would be a tick and a talk.
Oh, at the same time?
Yeah. So a 7S and a 7S Plus.
Low end.
At 4.8-inch and 5.5-inch.
Right.
And a 5.8-inch iPhone 8. Wow. It might not even be like an iPhone 8 Plus. It might just be the iPhone 8. So
that would be... Wow, that would be like Samsung level confusing for folks.
But considering that the iPhone 8 mock-ups that I've been seeing look like rip-offs of Samsung Galaxies, it really would not be too crazy, I think. So.
Which is ironic.
Well, you know, every year it's like who's copying who. That's sort of noticed. So.
Well, you know, some people have been very critical of Apple for not innovating. I'm one of them. But you know what? Form factor innovation is really not necessary at this point. I hope it's not like so thin that, you know, you might like slice your hand if you hold it too tight.
You might be able to slide it under a door.
Right.
To open, you know, open a lock, something like that.
Right. We don't need it that thin. In fact, I was just thinking about it the other day. I want Apple to stop with this thinness thing. I think it's unhealthy. this electronic anorexia.
I have some fun, thin stories for you with the last story I have on the list today.
Okay. But, you know, the iPhones are thin enough. They're whatever, you know. Give us more battery life, please. Give us a headphone jack, please. And on the MacBook Pros, give us a USB-A port. You know? Maybe an SD card slot. Enough with this thinness and, you know, removing features. It used to be we used to buy new devices because we'd get new things, additional features, not old ones we like taken away. I mean, Apple's famous for that. They took away floppies and they took away CD or DVD slots and, you know, they took away parallel and serial ports. Okay, fine. We've all gotten used to that over the years. But there are some things that really are really useful.
You say that as I have an external CD drive sitting in front of me. And yeah, it's interesting to watch. And I was one of the topics that I didn't put on our show notes today. It's a little early for it, but we'll be talking about a Google I/O and a WWDC wish list. So the sorts of improvements we want to see on both Google and Apple products. That's really, you know, each year for the last 5 years, I've gotten more excited about watching WWDC and Google I/O than I have with the announcements of the hardware for Apple.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even though we don't buy them. Like last Google I/O, didn't we all go meh?
Yeah, yeah, we did. But this year, you know, I'm not looking to upgrade my MacBook Pro. I've had that for about 2 years now. It's running really well, so that's going to stay where it is. But I would be interested in the next generation Apple Watch. And if there's an iPhone 8 that is a major upgrade, I would be interested in that too. So I've kind of fallen into this lifestyle of Surface Pro 4 at work and, you know, using Windows in my work life and using a Mac in my home life. And I've got enough cross-platform compatibility that I can do both, so I'm quite happy about that.
By the way, the Microsoft fanboys, of which, you know, several of our friends are, but not particularly them that I'm talking about. They're making a big to-do about, I think, J.D. Power's survey of customer satisfaction, where Surface Pro 4 owners are much happier than iPad owners.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me too much. You know, I've used my iPad. So right now, the current state of John's iPads, I own three of them. My iPad Mini 3 still sits by my bed. I use it every night for reading. My iPad Air 2, I use about once a week. I have a couple of use scenarios that I use the Air 2 for. My iPad Pro, the full size, has been sitting unused since about Christmas.
That's sad.
I know, it's very sad, but I didn't want to carry both the iPad Pro and the Surface Pro.
Yeah.
And the Surface Pro won out for work. So yeah. I think in the future I'm going to probably have – I probably won't buy another full-size iPad. I definitely probably won't buy another full-size iPad Pro. I like the iPad Mini, and I like the iPhone. I like the Surface Pro, and I like my MacBook. So those might be my four devices that I use on a regular basis.
And I'll say, you know, the only reason I want another iPad, a full-size iPad, you know, whatever it might be, of the Pro genre – is because of my daily doodle. It is the perfect size to do a doodling on. The iPad Mini is okay. You know, it's kind of like if you carry a little artist sketchbook. The small sketchbook is fine for just kind of doodling little things, but you want something bigger for, even though I spend no more than 15 minutes a day on my daily doodle, but even for those 15 minutes, having that larger surface is really handy. Even though I should also note, because they are doodles, I don't actually draw only one doodle per page. I'll spend a couple of days and have like three or four doodles on a single digital sheet, so to speak. But anyway, yeah,
single pane.
Yeah, really like having that bigger screen, and I was hoping that Apple would announce a new iPad Pro Junior, so I would sell mine or something and get, because I only got a 32 gig model that last year, not thinking I would be doing this daily doodle, which takes up some space. So I kind of need a 64 or 128 gig model at some point.
Well, that being said, the last piece, I have two Apple pieces left. One of them is an interesting piece because nothing happened.
All right.
On April 7th, nothing happened. All if right. you follow the mobile technology, security, mobile security, all that sort of world, which I do, you've heard that a hacking group had a large amount of iCloud usernames and passwords that they threatened Apple. If Apple didn't pay a certain amount of money by April 6th, that on April 7th they were going to wipe millions of users' iPhones. Yikes. And lock them out of their iCloud accounts and, you know, annoy them and all those sorts of things. Nothing happened on April 7th. Apple, as far as everyone knows,
which is awesome, as it turns out.
Yeah, exactly. Apple did not pay any money, as far as we know. And the subsequent analysis that was conducted in the last few weeks basically shows that all of the usernames and passwords that were put forward as we have these, you know, the demo ones that this group put out, mm-hmm. were all exploited from other places. Mm. And because Apple login at iCloud, whatever at me.com, whatever at mac.com, they had just basically said, hey, we've got all these, and they were counting on the fact that people use the same password for their email as they did for these services that have been hacked. So Evony was one of the services that majorly had gotten hacked, and they were hoping that, well, if you use this for your Evony account, then you'll probably use the same one for your iCloud account.
I see.
So the moral of the story, do not use the same password for everything.
I think that's a piece of good advice for everybody. And also that there are some pretty good password management tools to help you manage having many, many passwords. Some are passive in that you basically lock it up in an encrypted file somewhere that you can search. E-Wallet Go is the one. No, I'm using E-Wallet. E-Wallet Go is gone. I'm using E-Wallet on my iPhone. It is basically an encrypted file that you can search through and, you know, has nice little cards. There are some that are more active where it actually integrates with your browser to log into things. I think you use one, but I'm still not trusting of those.
Yep, I use 1Password. Yeah. Which I used LastPass for a while. I like 1Password because it is a local storage. I don't use their cloud storage. Mm-hmm. I just keep everything on my machine. That's why I switched to it. And I use KeePass for a lot of older stuff. Well, basically,
KeePass is open source, right?
Yep. So before I went to LastPass, I had a big KeePass file. So every so often, I need to find a password that I used 10 years ago or older, or a registration code for something, just some randomness. So KeePass is great to have access to, and 1Password I've been very happy with. Now, 1Password does desperately need to update their UI on Windows. Mm. Their Windows UI looks like it did 10 years ago, and it's really quite ugly. But their Mac UI on the iPhone and on iOS and both macOS are very nice.
Yeah. Speaking, you know, it's not in our show notes, but I did want to mention this, not since you mentioned upgrading things. You know, recently Apple released, what is it, iOS 10.3
mm-hmm.
or 3.1 for, you know, iPad and iPhone. And although most people won't notice it, one of the things they did was upgraded from a 32 to 64-bit file system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things it will lead up to, not for this one, but eventually, you know, for like maybe iOS 10.4, is that 32-bit apps will no longer work.
Yeah.
And my favorite game, which is Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution on the iPad, is already not available for download. So if I bought a new iPad today, I could not download it from the iTunes App Store, which annoys me to no end, because Civilization Revolution 2 is terrible. I bought it, mm-hmm. don't like it, won't play it. So it means that I can't upgrade my iPad if I want to keep playing my game at some point.
Yeah, I've had a few apps like that as well. Unfortunately, usually I find out about them after the upgrade, which is very frustrating. Yeah. Some classic board games that I bought a few years ago that have never been updated. So
yeah, Ball comes to mind.
Sort of depressing. Yeah.
But the
benefit, though, is that we should see faster backups and restores of iPhone and iOS and macOS. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Now, the way you can tell, I'm told, that an app will be, or an app is not long for the iOS world, is if you get a message from iOS when you launch one of these apps, it will say, this app may slow down your iPad or whatever it is using, which is what I see when I launch Civilization Revolution. So that's your cue that, hey, you know, if you want to keep using that app for whatever reason, like I want to keep playing Civilization Revolution pretty much till I die, you know, you're going to have to not upgrade your device, which is kind of interesting. Which means
well,
I'm going to have to keep my iPad Pro on, you know, whatever rev I'm on just to keep playing the game and buy a new iPad Pro for doodling.
But in your own admission, you might not even live to see the next Mac Mini. So
that's true.
Know.
But I will live to see the next iOS upgrade.
I really hope that I'm not like doing episode 300 with Frank and we're like, hey, remember Todd? He was... Todd was great.
Too bad he died before the new Mac Mini came out.
Yeah, too bad he died before the new Mac Mini came out.
Yeah, it just came out
last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sigh. But,
okay. So, my last piece is kind of a little story. I performed eye surgery this week.
And you're not even licensed to practice medicine.
I know. I'm not that kind of doctor. But my wife's iPhone 6, the battery had a dead cell in it, and so the battery is now sitting right here. Mm-hmm. That battery, which is pretty thin, I'm showing it to Todd on our Skype video feed right now. But she had told me finally that it was she'd had enough, so I bought a battery off eBay for $6.50.
Wow, that's cheap.
From a seller that hopefully, you know, had pretty good reviews. But honestly, now that I've done this, if it flakes out, I'll just do it again. But I thought I'd relate what actually goes into replacing an iPhone 6 battery.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
I thought it was somewhat unique. So first thing you got to do is get an iPhone open, which is somewhat difficult. Not as difficult as I thought, though. I bought years ago a toolkit from iFixit.com. Okay. iFixit is basically the authoritative source for these guides. In fact, the guide I used to open up the iPhone and replace the battery came from iFixit. And they had a very nice tool set that I think cost about $70 at the time, and it had every tool conceivable. So I broke that out. It's the same tool set I used last year when I fixed my Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. And I use it for pretty much any computer-related work that I need to work on. So the first thing I do is crack the thing open. You take out two Pentalobe screws at the bottom, and then you try not to lose them. These are the first of many screws that you cannot lose, because if you get them mixed up or put them back in the wrong order, very bad things happen.
Right. And Pentalobe screws, for people don't know, are Apple proprietary screw heads. Only Apple uses these weird, they kind of look like a mutation of a Phillips screw head, but they're not.
You know, like a 5-point star with rounded edges.
Right. Grew an extra thing.
Yes. So I took those out, and then it came time to crack it open. So you basically use a suction cup on the front and a little plastic pry tool, mm-hmm. and use the suction cup to pull the front up enough so that you can kind of get the pry tool in, mm-hmm. and then you go around sort of doing this you know, back and forth motion until the little snaps come loose. And you do that until you can basically clamshell up the front. And the front clamshells quite nicely because all the data cables in the iPhone 6 are up at the top.
Which direction is the clamshell? At the top or the side? The long edge or the short edge? Or
It looks like a Star Trek communicator.
Okay,
basically.
Got it.
So, you know, bottom piece and then it comes right up on the top there.
Okay.
So then I thought, well, this is easy. I see the battery right there. This can't be that bad. I wish that was true.
Yeah.
So the next step was taking the battery data cable off. That required a couple of screws to take off a little metal clamp. The piece came off. Those two screws were, I think, about 3.5 millimeter in length. So very small screws. Put those aside. Then I got the data cable off, and I thought, now I really shouldn't have much more to do. And then I read the guide, and it said, take off all the data cables at the top.
Why? Just because?
Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So I got, so I thought, okay, fine. So I took another bracket off. This bracket had screws that had five screws. Two of them were the same length. The other three were all different lengths. Mm. So I had a little piece of paper next to me, and I was laying out things carefully and kind of putting, okay, this screw goes in here, that screw goes in there. Because okay. if you screw that up and you take, for example, so a 3.5 millimeter screw.
Right.
Yeah, if you screw it up, so to speak. If you take a 3.5 millimeter screw and you put it into the hole where the 2.5 millimeter screw is supposed to go, you will screw it into the logic board, and then very things happen.
That's
so yeah,
bad.
That and you're looking at these little screws and they are tiny, you know, little specks that look like dust on the table. So then I took that off, and then I had four data cables to remove. The screen, so I think they went in order of the front camera had a data cable. Then the home button had a cable. Then the screen had a cable. And then the digitizer had a cable. So all four of those get taken off. And then at that point, you can take the front piece completely off. It's no longer has to be clamshelled up.
Right.
Okay, fine. Now what next? Well, next is time to remove the adhesive that holds the battery to the back of the case. Have you ever used 3M command strips, Todd?
I don't know. I don't know what those are. I'd have to go look them
up. These are these little adhesive strips that you put on your wall. If you don't want to put a hole in your wall, you put these strips up.
Oh, they have like a picture or something.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you take them down, you pull the...
Okay, we're back. We had a bit of a technical difficulty. My 2008 MacBook Pro decided to freeze, just as John was talking about adhesives.
Yeah, it didn't like the fact that we were talking about opening up one of its brothers.
Barbaric.
So, as I was mentioning, the iPhone battery, if you've ever used 3M command adhesives that you've pulled down to release from the wall, that's basically how the iPhone battery is stuck into the back of the case. This is a bit scary in that, but it wasn't the scariest part of this, but this was scary enough that you basically have to pull these adhesives out. There's two strips of them. And if you break them, then you are really up the creek, because now you have an adhesive stuck on the back of the battery to the back of the case, and you have no way to loosen it. The way that iFixit recommends is to basically use a hairdryer or something to heat the back of the iPhone, and then use a credit card to slide under the battery and try to get this adhesive off. So I was kind of cringing at that. I was lucky, though. As long as you use kind of a good grasp on these things and you notice if they start to tear and sort of stop them from tearing, you're good. The number one rule when working on an iPhone or any small device is just don't be in a hurry. Very deliberate in what you're trying to do. So then I finally got the battery out. I think the whole reason you took all the data cables off was because trying to wiggle wiggle those adhesives out while that was still connected probably would have been a lot of strain on those data cables. So that's probably why they were recommended to take off. Putting them back on was a bit of an ordeal, especially the digitizer cable, because the iFixit guide specifically said, don't press down on the middle of the ribbon cable. Press on one end and then the other end, but if you press in the middle, you could damage the digitizer. Well, this is a cable that is all of maybe 6 millimeters long, maybe 8 millimeters long. So there, you know, the end, it's like you push one end in, and go to the other end, and the first end pops off, and vice versa. There is a metal plate that goes above it, so it will get pressed down through the metal plate, but you still want it to hold on. So that probably took the longest part of the whole repair, was just getting that digitizer cable back on. And then put back on the screen cable, put back on the home button cable, put back on the camera cable, screw down the plate, put the battery cable back on, screw down that plate, and then put it back together, power it on, and pray. And thankfully it powered up, and so far it has not seemed to have any problem. Carrie tells me that it's running a little bit quicker down in battery than her old one seems to. But since it doesn't have a dead cell, it dies when it hits 0% and not when it's at, 30% or 25%.
How long did this entire surgical operation take?
It took about 45 minutes.
Oh, wow. It sounded a lot longer than that. Okay, that's not too bad.
It wasn't too bad. Yeah, it really, the biggest thing was that digitizer cable, the adhesive on the back of the battery, and we didn't put more adhesive on, which I'm kind of curious how it's going to work. Carrie told me today that she can kind of hear the battery rattle a little bit in there. I said, just don't throw your phone around that much. Because it's, you know, it's kind of sandwiched in there nicely. I wasn't too concerned about it moving much. But it was really getting that digitizer back on, getting the adhesives off, and being very, very deliberate in opening the thing up. You know, you really don't want to move in a herking, jerking motion. So I sort of used a very light touch. And also just organizing screws as they came out to make sure that they went back in the right place.
Right. And I would also say, I would also add, you know, as an older guy, a more mature human being, not emotionally, but just, you know, older. as your eyesight starts to fail, basically become more, what is it, farsighted? Yeah, farsighted. And near objects become harder to see. Working on these tiny things becomes very difficult. Did you use like a really bright light? Did you use a magnifying glass, third hand kind of thing? Or you just operating in the raw?
The room I'm in is actually very well lit.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to use any sort of third-party light or anything like that. Now, if I was doing this on a regular basis, I think I would keep the same tools because I was very happy with the iFixit tool set. I would probably buy a large, you know, a magnifying
like a loop
stand light. Yeah. So that, well, I have one of those. What I would get would be one that literally, you know, sits over, you know, as you're working.
Yeah.
And it's got a light in the ring light there. So that would be one thing I would do. And I also would buy a few more of the specialty tools that iFixit has. They actually have a couple of tools that they've made since the version of the toolset that I have that are designed for opening iPhones, designed for getting adhesives unstuck that you know, so if you don't want to use your own credit card, they've got a piece of plastic and a, you know, kind of a wedge end on it to get these things out. So I really enjoy the tools that they have available, and they definitely have guides for pretty much anything that you would want to use, along with comments that people have made at each step of the guide. So
now,
which
iPhone is this again? iPhone 6?
iPhone 6.
And do you know what iFixit's fixability rating? Because they normally rate it in 1 to 10 or whatever.
I can take a look at it. I do know that this particular guide, when I looked it up, was a moderate fix, you know, basically it told me I would have a moderate amount of effort to it, which I kind of looked at originally and went, yeah, right, how bad can that be? And then once I start getting there, I'm like, yeah, I guess this is moderate because of all the data cables I had to pull off. And
it sounded difficult to me. Quite honestly, and having heard what you have to say, I would not attempt this myself.
I think you could do it. It just, I gave you the kind of the rough array. In fact, I'll put a link to the actual guide that I used in our show notes so you can, people can follow.
You know, I trust your judgment, John, but still, I mean, you know, I listened to you when you talked about adding memory or replacing memory in a MacBook Pro, and I thought, yeah, I think I can do that, and I did. You know, and I think we talked about replacing memory in the iMac, because my iMac, you don't have to remove the front screen like the newer ones. I said, yeah, it's easy enough. Not difficult. I would say those are easy. What iFixit's moderate sounds pretty darn hard to me, because there's so many steps. I mean, you know, replacing the memory modules is just like, I don't know, 5 steps, 6 steps. This sounds like there's a lot.
Well, I did look up the fixability rating on the iPhone 6 is 7 out of 10.
Wow, that's actually pretty good.
Yep, and this is a moderate, so 2 out of 3 in the difficulty level. They say it takes about 45 minutes, 15 to 45 minutes. So,
so that was pretty much you're within the norm
or
the expected time. Okay, now the other thing I want to ask you. We're in day, let's see, November.
905 of the Mac Mini not being.
I was thinking we're about day 150 of you having the Apple AirPods. Have you lost one yet?
No. Not at all. I used them 3 or 4 days this week. They stay very well in my ears. Occasionally, I put the case either in my bag or in my pocket, and I forget which one, so I have to look in the other place, and it's always there. But now,
have you tried to find my AirPod feature, the new feature?
I have, but it, of course, it shows the last location where your AirPods were. Mm. So I could hold the AirPods in my hands, but if there's no power going to them, it's going to tell me that they're in my office or that they're okay. Something like that. So
the usefulness is limited, really.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, if you really have no idea where your AirPods are,
yeah,
it's going to be very good to have. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you have not yet lost one or both of your AirPods, so... keep up with that, and we'll return hopefully next week on day 912 of No New Mac Mini. Sad to say. And hopefully I can splice together the two audio files. Right, I should note, you know, I think I've mentioned it before, so I use this a commercial piece of software called Audio Hijack Pro. I'm actually using the old one. I never upgraded to version 3 to record the Skype calls with John. And the way it records, it's beautiful because basically it just records an audio file. It doesn't do like a temp file and then, you know, rewrite it to create a final file. And so even though my MacBook literally froze, basically John was doing John's audio went into a stutter mode. And I couldn't do anything except force it to shut down by pressing the power button and holding it down and then rebooting it. Because of the way it stores things, basically I'm just going to be able to splice the two audio files together and create a complete podcast, 201. So, kind of amazing. I think we started with me in 67
or thereabouts. Yeah, somewhere around there, 69 maybe, but...
Yeah. So, we've recorded a whole bunch of podcasts, and I guess I'm going to have to not use this MacBook Pro anymore. It did freeze the other day, just in use. And I was kind of thinking, maybe just a one-off thing, but this is the second time now, because I'll switch to the MacBook Air again, even though it has a smaller screen and scrunchier keyboard, but it seems to be, well, now that I've said it, it's probably going to become unreliable, too. but, on a better note, my daughter graduates next month, so I'll inherit her MacBook Air at some point. So I'll only have a 4-year-old MacBook to deal with instead of whatever this is, 9 years. Okay. Mobile Views Podcast number 201 is in the can. We will talk to you next time.